When I was putting on my shoes and throwing my Wellingtons into the boot, I saw him again. Or rather, part of him. Just a long nose and one eye protruding from beneath a broken door. It wasn't till I had started the engine and began to move off that he finally declared himself, stealing out from his hiding place, body low, tail trailing, eyes fixed intently on the car's front wheels, and as I gathered speed and headed down the track, he broke into an effortless lope. I had been through this before and was always afraid he might run in front of me, so I put my foot down and began to hurtle downhill. This was where Jock came into his own. I often wondered how he'd fare against a racing greyhound, because by golly he could run. That sparse frame housed a perfectly physical machine, and the slender limbs reached and flew again and again, devouring the stony ground beneath, keeping up with the speeding car with joyful ease. There was a sharp bend about halfway down, and here Jock invariably sailed over the wall and streaked across the turf, a little dark blur against the green, and having craftily cut off the corner, he reappeared like a missile, zooming over the grey stones lower down. This put him into a nice position for the run to the road, and when he finally saw me onto the tarmac, my last view of him was of a happy, panting face looking after me. Clearly he considered it was a job well done, and he would wander contentedly back up to the farm to await the next session, perhaps with the postman or the baker's van. And there was another side to Jock. He was an outstanding performer at the sheepdog trials, and Mr. Corner had won many trophies with him. In fact, the farmer could have sold the little animal for a lot of money, but couldn't be persuaded to part with him. Instead, he purchased a bitch, a scrawny little female counterpart of Jock, and a trial winner in her own right. With this combination, Mr. Corner thought he could breed some world-beating types for sale. On my visits to the farm, the bitch joined in the car chasing, but it seemed to me as though she was doing it more or less to humour her new mate, and she always gave up at the first bend, leaving Jock in command. You could see her heart wasn't in it. When the pups arrived, seven fluffy black balls tumbling about the yard and getting under everybody's feet, Jock watched indulgently as they tried to follow him in his pursuit of my vehicle. And you could almost see him laughing as they fell over their feet and were left trailing far behind. It happened that I didn't have to go there for about 10 months, but I saw Robert Corner in the market occasionally, and he told me he was training the pups and that they were shaping well. Not that they needed much training. It was in their blood. And he said they had tried to round up the cattle and sheep nearly as soon as they could walk. When I finally saw them, they were like seven jocks. Meagre, darting little creatures, flitting noiselessly about the buildings. And it didn't take me long to find out that they had learned more than sheep herding from their father. There was something very evocative about the way they began to prowl around in the background as I prepared to get into my car. Peeping furtively from behind straw bales, slinking with elaborate nonchalance into favourable positions for a quick getaway. And as I settled into my seat, I could sense that they were all crouched in readiness for the off. I revved my engine, let in the clutch with a bump, and shot across the yard, and in a second the immediate vicinity erupted in a mass of hairy forms. I roared onto the track and put my foot down. And on either side of me the little animals pelted along, shoulder to shoulder, their faces all wearing the intent, fanatical expression I knew so well. When Jock cleared the wall, the seven pups went with him, and when they reappeared and entered the home straight, I noticed something different. On past occasions, Jock had always had one eye on the car. This was what he considered his opponent. But now, on that last quarter mile, as he hurtled along at the head of a shaggy phalanx, he was glancing at the pups on either side as though they were the main opposition. And there was no doubt he was in trouble. Superbly fit though he was, these stringy bundles of bone and sinew which he had fathered had all his speed, plus the newly minted energy of youth. And it was taking every shred of his power to keep up with them. Indeed, there was one terrible moment when he stumbled and was engulfed by the bounding creatures around him. It seemed that all was lost, but there was a core of steel in Jock. Eyes popping, nostrils dilated, he fought his way through the pack until by the time we reached the road, he was once more in the lead. But it had taken its toll. I slowed down before driving away and looked down at the little animal standing with lolling tongue and heaving flanks on the grass verge. It must have been like this with all the other vehicles, and it wasn't a merry game any more. I suppose it sounds silly to say you could read a dog's thoughts, but everything in his posture betrayed the mounting apprehension that his days of supremacy were numbered. Just round the corner lay the unthinkable ignominy of being left trailing in the rear of that litter of young upstarts, and as I drew away, Jock looked after me, and his expression was eloquent. How long can I keep this up? I felt for the little dog, and on my next visit to the farm about 2 months later, I wasn't looking forward to witnessing the final degradation which I felt was inevitable. But when I drove into the yard, I found the place strangely unpopulated. Robert Corner was forking hay into the cow's racks in the byre. He turned as I came in. "Where are all your dogs?" I asked. He put down his fork. "All gone. By God, there's a market for good working sheepdogs. I've done right well out at job."
"But you've still got Jock."
"Oh, aye. Couldn't part with Tout, lad. He's over there." And so he was, creeping around as of old, pretending he wasn't watching me. And when the happy time finally arrived and I drove away, it was like it used to be, with the lean little animal herring along by the side of the car, but relaxed, enjoying the game, winging effortlessly over the wall and beating the car down to the tarmac with no trouble at all. I think I was as relieved as he was that he was left alone with his supremacy unchallenged, that he was still top dog.